Thanks so much for joining us. This is another episode of Smart City Policy Stories, and we're very excited about this one today. We're speaking with Max Steyer of the Partnership for Public Service. This is a very important organization, and if you look up Max's background, Max's history, you're going to understand why. Max, we're going to get right into it. Tell us about yourself and tell us about the organization.
Well, thank you very much for this conversation. I very much appreciate it. So I run a nonpartisan nonprofit organization dedicated to better government and stronger democracy, and started it 25 years ago with the idea that we have one tool for collective action as a country to deal with our biggest problems that has the imprimatur of the public and taxpayer resources behind it. And that's the United States federal government. There are 1.5 million nonprofits out there, all focused on important issues of public concern. But really, there was very little of any attention paid to trying to make sure our federal government could actually work better, deliver on all those different issues of public import collectively. So we have done everything we can to strengthen the capacity of our federal government to do better. And that includes trying to make sure it was well led, to get good talent, and to create a healthy relationship between our society and our government. We have pivoted from that perspective, given the new administration that has come on, and are now really focused on supporting civil servants in an unprecedented time, engaging the public still on understanding why an effective government is vital to their interests, and something that I think is near and dear to both of our hearts, which is we've moved into trying to take our capacity that we deployed at the federal level to cities and states.
It's so important, you know, and what you've done is really incredible. I've been fascinated to find out that books that I read, so the book on transitions before the oath, is filled with quotes and comments and comments that are associated with you. You have been historically the transition king. You've helped bring the two different major party leaders together, you know, their transition teams together, and make sure that they're educated for the purposes that you just said, so that we are creating a really great talent pool, a seamless transition for this great leadership opportunities and to maintain really good talent. It's just an incredible story, Max. I mean, you've had to have a lot of fun doing this.
It is actually that piece amongst many has been incredibly fun. And you're right. I mean, what we realized some almost 20 years ago was that the handoff of power was fundamental to the success of the new administration. And it had been treated like a Groundhog Day phenomenon. There was no manual about how to do it right. There was no learning system to capture best practice or to identify laws that needed to be changed in order to make the process better. And so we built that learning system and created a Center on Presidential Transition. And back to the point on the pivot, those same issues apply when you're talking about a handoff of power from governor to governor or mayor to mayor. These things fall out of the normal purview of the direct institution because it's new leaders coming in. So actually having an external organization play that role has been fundamental to the federal side. And I think likewise has real capacity of impact at the state and local side. We have worked with NGA on that state governor to new governor transition. And the truth is that it's the same stuff. Like the same issues have to be addressed, just in a different context.
You know, when you think about it, the numbers I've always used is that there's about 3,000 counties in the country, and then about another 20,000 cities and towns. So I often will say there's 23,000 local governments. I've said it for so long, I don't know if it's exactly true.
Yeah.
You know, when you think about it, you're a county leader, and you might represent, you know, a quarter of your county. And in a lot of states, that means you're truly managing the operation of the county. And so for the comment that you made earlier, making sure that there are civil servants within that county that are handling issues about roads or healthcare, the judicial end of county government, county sheriffs and so on. And of course, jails, and county attorney's offices and so on. That you have those civil servants who have that training, the background, and that you're maintaining that good talent. So there is a seamless transition, like you said, whether you're electing a new county leader or not.
Right.
And that's really where you come in. Now, with 23,000 local governments, I hadn't thought about this, but it does seem like a big bite. Do you feel like you're able to take on such a large audience?
Well, I think it, you know, again, it depends, I know, on what kind of intervention you're talking about. At the federal level, we really do spend a lot of direct time with the campaigns and the teams that are responsible for taking on the government. And there, you're talking about a $7 trillion entity with 4,000 new leaders and hundreds of operating units. I think that there is an opportunity for doing smaller scale work with still very, very large organizations, either at the gubernatorial or the county or mayoral levels. But I think there's a lot of opportunity to create resources that are not about the direct human to human contact, but they can just be the manual or the checklists that are going to be valuable for the for everybody. And I think even getting people to focus on what kinds of questions they should be asking. So, there's a process side to this, and you stated something I think very important. A lot of this is about creating the effective relationship between the new politically selected leader and the pre-existing career workforce, and also understanding that a lot of the success of the new political team is going to come from their ability to invest in working effectively together. And that's a step that many times is skipped as people are overwhelmed with the the problems of the moment. You see the urgent crowding out the important. And I think that's, again, this is the doorway in. Then you talk about all the good practices that are possible around, just effective management, and also investment in the long-term capacity of these institutions. That's something that, again, we don't see enough of. Political leaders usually come and go relatively quickly. And when you have short-term leaders, they don't often align well to the long-term needs of the institutions they're responsible for.
You know, it's so funny. You said that the urgent crowding out the important. It makes me often think about this tug of war that we have in government between data and anecdote. And I know that probably every layer of government wants to say they see that more at their layer, federal level, state level, or local level. I'm a local government guy, and so I feel like we saw it, and I'm going to say we saw it the most. But this tug of war between data and anecdote, and folks who can say, well, we all know, or we all see, or everybody says all these words that you're not supposed to say in couples therapy and marriage therapy. You know, you're not supposed to say, well, everybody knows or everybody says, but you're somehow or another allowed to apply that to government. And somehow or another, we often have this challenge of how do we use data to combat these anecdotes? You know, the one public works guy that somebody saw leaning against a shovel for a moment, but you don't understand the incredible importance of what those public works offices have done, those employees have done for a community. How do we defeat the anecdote with data?
Well, so I think it's also understanding there's a reason why that happens all the time, and to harness that for good. And the reason why, and this is something that I came to later in life, which is I was always a data person, but I think anecdote is actually way more persuasive. So I think in thinking about how you communicate with the public and with critical audiences, including your own employees, recognizing how important the anecdote is, you should be using it for that purpose. I think on the broader point of how do you get organizations to become more evidence-based, data-driven in the choices that are made, I think this comes down to leadership and to people and to training. And it's one of those things that I see all the time. People look, example, at technology as, a panacea. The technology doesn't happen if you don't have the people inside who understand the value of it, who can actually execute effectively in delivering it. And so I think this is the answer to your question lies in that question of how do you create the right skilled workforce that knows how to use data, that understands the value of it, and is led by people who likewise feel the same way. And part of it is always finding the good. I think one of the interesting aspects in the public sector is there's a tendency for the infrastructure to be directed at finding problem rather than finding solution. And one of the things that I have been most proud of in the work we've done is trying to turn the ship and trying to create a recognition culture, creating opportunities to find the positive things, the people who are doing amazing work that are then able to be role models and solutions for the other problems that surely exist. So I think the way you address this is not by waving a wand, but you find people who are deploying data effectively to solve for problem, and you build off of what are they doing that's succeeding, and how do you replicate that, and how do you move talent around so they learn from that, so you bring people into healthy data-driven cultures that can then absorb it and return to other places where they can, you know, carry that seed. I think so much of what we need in our governments across the board is already there. It's just not in all the places that you want it to be in. So finding it where it is and then figuring out how to spread it, to me, is a very powerful strategy.
Yeah. And, you know, spreading it, it's so funny. You talk about finding the good and telling the stories.
Yes.
You created with the Partnership for Public yes. Service, the SAMMYs.
Yes.
And so you're telling these stories of these great, great heroes of public yes. service that no one would ever otherwise hear of.
Yes, exactly.
Talk to us a minute about that.
Yeah, no, I mean, you that's our flagship effort here. And actually, we will be doing it again in June 17th at the federal level. And, you know, what we saw is that the American public had no idea about all the amazing things that career civil servants were doing on their behalf, solving big, big problems. So we went out to find the most innovative federal employees. And what we learned was that it wasn't just the American people who didn't know about this. And in order to rebuild trust, that was vital for them to actually know these stories and understand them. But the folks inside the government didn't know about them either. And so we actually determined that there were two audiences that we had, both external and then internal. And so we have done this now for 24 years. We have over 800 honorees. They have done amazing things from, eradicating polio in India to, dealing with a nuclear waste site and saving billions of dollars and getting it done decades ahead of schedule. And I mean, the list goes on and on and on. And as you say, no one knew anything about it inside or outside government. What we discovered is by honoring those folks, we creating the Oscars of Government Service, it not only gave those people their just dessert, but it also spread their ideas. And that recognition had a massive multiplier effect. So, you know, one of my favorite examples I will try to say very quickly was a group at the embassy in Beijing put these pollution sensors out to warn Americans who were living in Beijing about when there were bad air days. And of course, the data did not get limited just to Americans. It helped spur the environmental movement in China. Now, the folks at the embassy said, well, why are we only doing this in Beijing? Shouldn't we do this in India and everywhere else? And they got no support from their superiors at the State Department until we honored them with the SAMMYs, the recognition. And once we did, the leaders at the State Department said, hey, this is a good idea. We should spread it. So it was fascinating. The idea didn't change. It was simply that they had a validation from us. And all of a sudden, what, you know, that idea became a good one. It's interesting to see. It's very powerful. It's very important. I do think people complain about the risk aversion in the public sector without appreciating what the incentive systems are that create that risk aversion. And a big part of it is you get, you know, crushed if you make a mistake, and nothing good happens to you if you do something really well. So you've got to change that equation if you want government to actually lean into innovation and better results.
You know, I'm talking to you from Austin, Texas, and I'm an Austin guy. We think of ourselves as the it city of the world, but we know there's some other it cities that are out there, and there's a lot of them that are nipping at our heels that are coming up. But what's neat for us is we have a mayor who had served years ago, Mayor Kirk Watson, as mayor, and then spent an interim period as our state senator, and then came back here recently. So it's kind of been fascinating. We've been able to see projects that he did long ago, and then he came back. One of the projects he worked on was basically recreating what was our old urban airport right in the middle of the city, but rebuild it in such a way so that it was more walkable, fun, friendly with green space and all that. It's really kind of a wonderful example for a lot of communities. It's called Mueller. It's where I live, actually. But what the mayor will tell you all the time is he said, I was mayor during that time. You know, I was involved, but there were hundreds of public servants from land use or water, wastewater, a million of the folks who made this such a special example. And he goes, and it's not perfect. The next Mueller that another city like Kansas City or Pittsburgh creates will be even better. And I
if
think
they
that's
know
so
you
important.
yet.
It's those hundreds of civil servants that we never hear
Absolutely.
from.
Yeah. I mean, unleashing the ideas and the talent of your workforce is the road to success in any environment, in any knowledge-based environment. And it just does not happen enough in the public sector. And part of it is the nature of, again, the turnover of leadership. So again, I think figuring out how to create a culture that generates the openness to listen, that empowers your workforce is incredibly important. I can't help but say one other big program that we launched at the in the federal government that has, I think, it changed things in very big ways that could apply in any city or any state is what we call our best places to work rankings. And we got a law passed that requires every federal agency to conduct an annual employee survey. We get over 1 million responses from the federal workforce, and we rate and rank all of the federal agencies according to what the employees have to say about their workplace. And it's not, are they happy or not? It's ultimately, are they engaged or not? And it's whether innovation is supported, and it's whether they have the resources they need to deliver good results to the public. And it's fundamentally the most important data in understanding how well these places are managed. And it allows you to benchmark and compare across the entire US government. Every city, every state should do the same thing. And it would allow for both accountability, but also a roadmap of improvement, and identifying not the worst places, but the best places that you want to emulate. Like, what organizations have got this right? How are they doing it? What leaders do they have? And then how do you transfer that to the larger system of government? And anyway, that's something that I'd love to see. And then obviously you could compare cities and states and cities and the federal government, et cetera, if you had that as a sort of a national program.
Absolutely. I love it. That they absolutely need to be doing that in cities and counties. What a cool thing to do to create competition between different departments within your city or county,
absolutely.
Wherever.
Or across cities, just as you said, in cities, like you're working environmental issues in Austin or in Portland, Oregon, or wherever else it is, this is a good way to compare. NASA is currently number one, has been for some years, but not always. And it's amazing to see the pride of it. They had in the space station, the people up there in the sign saying, "We're number one," it's across the board. It creates that, again, in a knowledge-based world, employee morale is a fundamental ingredient, and it leads to better performance. We did a study of the VA hospitals across the entire United States, and you could see, tremendous alignment. Where you had strong employee morale, you had veterans that were getting better, were perceiving better service. You had better outcomes, less nurse attrition, on and on and on, everything. And it's true, you see this same kind of phenomenon in the private sector, where you look at the very best customer-oriented organizations, and if you ask them, how do you get there? They say, by creating the best employee culture possible. And so same in government. And this is a way of understanding that, especially when you don't have financial metrics that you can reduce all your activities to, as you do in a for-profit environment.
So true. And thinking about now with what's happening at the federal level, I'll say, from the outside perspective, it seems like an arsonist approach to dealing with civil servants who,
yes,
it's when I think of it from a taxpayer perspective, it makes me angry, because I think that we have now trained, grown,
right,
and brought together these great civil servants who know their jobs. And if you don't like what they're doing, they could easily be repurposed into another role, but they are important, and they have sacrificed so much and probably a bigger salary to do public good.
Right.
But what's important for local leaders is to be able to have that effective and cooperative relationship with the federal level. And it's so important. And it's so important to everyday taxpayers. So you want that really great seamless connection between local
yes.
government and the federal level. How do we get back to it? I mean, how do we get back to, do you think it's going to be our civil servants who are going to save us here?
I think it's going to actually require everybody to save us. So you use the word arson. I think it is the best descriptor for what's occurring right now. There are all sorts of, legitimate beefs on, desire for wanting our federal government to do better. It can do better. There's a real, we are very Focused on a lot of modernization opportunities that exist in the federal government and beyond that. But what is occurring right now is the reverse of that. It's actually destruction for no purpose. And the argument is that they're getting rid of waste when they're creating the waste. And so you ask the question, how do we get back to the world where we want to be? And I think ultimately it's the public that has to understand that they're getting hurt. And it's true if they're a business leader, if they're a farmer, if they're a veteran, if they're a medical patient. It just across the board, the damage is pervasive. And they need to stand up and say, this is not acceptable, and hold the people to account who are making really, really bad choices for the American people. And it is deeply sad to watch, as you just said, civil servants who are there for serving the public being treated in an inhumane way. I mean, this administration walked in saying they wanted to traumatize them. I have never seen any leader or manager come into an organization with the goal of traumatizing their workforce and deliver real value. Like, that's not how you do it. So I think legitimate issues around what you want our government to do, but making sure it does it well and treating those that are responsible for doing it well appropriately seems like the basic responsibility of any public leader. So I do think we can get back to a time in which we can get the right idea of our government's there for the public good, not for the benefit of the leader of the day, and that there is actually a constructive effort for reform. It will take the public standing up and saying that's what they want and finding what's happening right now unacceptable.
Yeah, and from the taxpayer perspective, I sit there and think, you want the best for your dollar, and the best would
it's
be to
ridiculous.
Have
the amount of waste that is being created right now. There's nothing ever like this. I mean, it's across the board. It's the cost side of this equation is going to haunt us for a very, very long time. I'm an optimist in general because I think at the end of the day, the people in our country are amazing, and the fact that you have so many people that want to serve despite sacrifice. It's interesting, like on the federal workforce, about a third of the civil servants are veterans. And there's a reason for it, because they serve their country in uniform and they want to continue to serve when they're finished in the military. And the civil service is the right place for that. So that desire for helping others, the power of purpose, I think will enable us to rebuild. But we need to do that as soon as possible, because the continued destruction is going to make that harder and harder.
Yeah, and far more expensive for everyone.
Yes, exactly right.
You know, Max, it's going to be such welcome news to every local leader across the country. I know that there's local leaders in rural parts of the community that have federal employees and federal offices.
Yes.
And there's local leaders that have certainly plenty of business that they do with the local, with the federal government, and important research and data and cooperation that they need. So what you're doing is so important, and we certainly look forward to you growing into the space of state and local government. I hope you bring the SAMEs concept to state and local government, because so many people have never heard these great heroic stories from people heard the call, ask what you can do for your country, and step up, and they become civil servants, professional servants for their community. This is so special. So thank you for what you're doing. Max, listen, having people tell those stories, I'm right there with you. That's when people hear those stories of those everyday civil servants, they're going to say, wait a second, these people are really important. What they're doing matters. So thank you for telling that.
Well, thank you for having me on your show as well. I think, again, getting the word out is vital. And we live in a world now where, social media, local media, influencers, all this stuff really matters. And I think everybody, needs to share what they have in their life in terms of their positive experiences, dealing with their friends, their relatives. As you said, even on the federal government side, it's like 85% of the federal workforce is outside the DC metro area. So, Texas, I think, is top three or four state in terms of federal employees. I mean, again, this is about the public understanding who these people are and what they do and why actually it's not a good thing, whether you want to fly safely or, have a, good response to a disaster, or, be able to go to the supermarket and buy hamburger meat and think your kids aren't going to get sick. I mean, all these things come from, good federal public servants. So We unfortunately, I'm sorry to say that more people will be aware of what our government does, what civil servants do by laws. I wish that weren't so, and we need to turn that around.
Well, and I hope it's not lost in the Department of Energy with the folks who protect our nuclear security and, of course, guard against nuclear problems around the world.
Yes. Again, it's extraordinary. So anyway, thank you for this opportunity.
No, absolutely. Thank you. Hey, so the Partnership for Public Service, is there a way people can support you, keep an eye out for activities or any?
I'm trying to ask that, we have our central website at ourourpublicservice.org. We have a website that's, designed to support federal employees and help answer their questions. We have a SAMMY's website, best places to work, but you can get all of it through that ourpublicservice.org. We are a nonpartisan, nonprofit organization, and really appreciate the support from everybody.
Max, if civil servants are Jedi Knights, you are the Obi-Wan Kenobi. Thank you so much for what you're doing. We really appreciate you. Keep up the great work. Thanks, Max.
Thank you.